Bus Riders Unite is kicking off their campaign for a fair transfer, Monday, February 21st. TriMet riders who depend on the bus and MAX are facing greater hardships. Many transit riders rely on single-trip fares to meet basic needs and can't afford to invest in transit passes. TriMet has cut bus service by over 170,000 hours, leading to longer wait times between buses, overcrowded buses that pass us by, and missed transfers. Service cuts have decimated evening and weekend service. TriMet's transfer policy is unequal and insufficient to give bus riders the time required to take care of our daily needs. OPAL, Bus Riders Unite, has a solution. Number one, extend all TriMet transfers to 3 hours for bus and MAX. And number two, support evening riders with unlimited transfer time after 7 p.m. Tonight on Circle A Radio, you'll hear interviews with organizers and community members who are working to make public transit affordable and equitable. They are part of an inspiring movement for social and environmental justice. First, we bring you an interview with Esperanza Martinez of the Bus Riders Union of Los Angeles. A little later in the show, we'll take a trip on TriMet with a dozen dynamic organizers from OPAL, Organizing People, Activating Leaders, and Bus Riders Unite. Stay tuned.
My name is Esperanza Martinez, and I'm one of the lead organizers of the Bus Riders Union. And I was actually born and raised in Los Angeles and have been working with the Bus Riders Union for 5+ years now. Let's see, if I told you a short history of the Bus Riders Union, we actually have been around now since 1994. We started off in Los Angeles County after an environmental justice fight that took place in the southern part of Los Angeles. Then we moved into transportation because we saw that people were complaining about respiratory diseases in their communities in Wilmington, and specifically connected to the incinerators and oil refineries in Wilmington. But they also talked about not having adequate transportation. So we moved into a probably like year and a half long research period trying to understand transit in LA County. Who makes decisions? Where does the agency, back then the Rapid Transit District, where does it get its funding? How are they spending it? And pretty early on, we saw that there was a discrepancy in how they were supposed to be spending their money. And we saw that the agency had been spending probably about 70% of their budget to build suburban rail, what we know today in Los Angeles as the current subway system, and 30% of their budget was going to operate and maintain the bus system. What's shocking about those numbers, as if the 70-30 wasn't enough, is that 94% of the MTA's ridership was on the bus, and 6% was on commuter rail, suburban rail, and the local subway system. So we saw that the MTA was using federal funds in a discriminatory way and thus violating Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act that states that no agency that receives federal funds can use it in a discriminatory way. So what helped us in our fight as we started understanding the agency and how they were spending their money was that the MTA was going to eliminate the monthly bus pass. As listeners may know, a monthly bus pass brings home savings to people because they have unlimited rides for a fixed amount of money. So the MTA was saying, we're going to eliminate the monthly bus pass because we have a deficit. And within that same month, it was in 96, I wasn't around, they also said, oh, we have a shortfall on this rail construction project, and so we need $150 million. Here it is. Very quickly, they were able to find money to continue to build these projects. At that moment, we were able to get a temporary restraining order. The courts ruled in our favor to say this is going to have a huge negative impact on working class people, people of color in the county. You need to stop. So that is what helped our case and what led to what is known as the Civil Rights Consent Decree, which was a legal contract that came out of the Bus Riders Union suing the MTA in October of 1996 for transit racism. So since then, 1996, we have been able to reinvest close to $2.7 billion back into the bus system through real expansion and improvements, but also through keeping money in people's pockets by keeping fares low. The RAPID program, which is an extension of the bus system, which adds to local service, has limited stops. That was also a huge victory of the BRU Civil Rights Consent Decree. We kept fares low for about 10 years. We added close to 1.3 million hours in bus service through expanded weekend service, midday and night service. And which is probably the biggest victory, is we built a very strong, replicable organization made up of bus riders, predominantly women, mostly of color, and working class, to lead the struggle for justice in LA County. So in 2011, we still have a very strong core of bus riders union leaders, of a really substantial base, and then a broader support circle of people that are members, either through they pay their monthly dues and they come to a meeting once a month. But yeah, I think that's what's been one of the most beautiful victories of our struggle, is that we have built a powerful organization that is women-led, people of color-led, and really focused on civil rights and environmental justice, not just in the county, but in the world. We look a lot at the conditions of the third world and the role that the United States, and, you know, in the case of the Bus Riders Union, the role that the auto plays in creating devastating conditions for people in the third world. Through the Bus Riders Union, we were able to add about 400 more buses to the fleet, right? Which means that buses come more frequently, you have later service, buses are less crowded. That directly impacts the people who are transit dependent and navigate their entire lives on the bus system. What it has also done through the addition of the RAPID program is that it has actually meant that people who are car drivers, the choice rider, have made the choice to leave their car at home and jump onto the bus system. So in that sense, the Bus Riders Union knew that being one of the largest emitters of greenhouse gases in the world, the United States, right, and given that LA is the car capital, I want to say, of the world, we have about 7 million autos out on the streets. So we knew that the auto was the main perpetrator of pollution, contamination through greenhouse gas emissions. And so it was an important goal of ours to try to reduce the number of autos on the streets through expanding the bus system and improving it. So now the Clean Air, Clean Lungs, Clean Buses campaign, which is a campaign of the Bus Riders Union, was meant to build upon all of the victories of the Bus Riders Union Civil Rights Consent Decree. And it has specific demands around creating free auto zones, bus-only lanes, which is our primary project inside of the Clean Air campaign, to then be able to give the bus priority and disadvantage the auto. In a city like Los Angeles and in a county like Los Angeles, the only thing that is going to force people to leave their cars is by creating real restrictions to the space that the auto can consume. We also know this because the Clean Air campaign is our global warming, climate change campaign. So we work on trying to understand the science of global warming and what role the auto plays, what role we play in curbing it and also making it worse. And then who's most impacted? So we know that we have a very distinct and necessary role to play in Los Angeles to reduce auto use, to therefore reduce greenhouse gas emissions, to therefore be able to do our part in curbing global warming.
You are listening to an interview with Esperanza Martinez of the Bus Riders Union, located in Los Angeles, California.
The BRU, from our inception, utilized the legal tactic to try to improve the material conditions of bus riders in LA County. We understood that the legal system and that this legal tactic comes with limitations. There are limitations to the law, and that just because an agency signs a contract saying they're going to do something doesn't guarantee you that they will. And I think we have that example of the United States that has signed many treaties with many different nations throughout its history and had no intention of following through with any of the tenets of any of those treaties. So similar to that, we knew that we were going to have to fight the MTA tooth and nail to get them to do any of the things that they said they were going to do. And they were asked to do three very basic things: reduce overcrowding, keep fares low, and create new service. So understanding that there were limitations to the law and that the court could rule in a particular way saying that MTA, you have to buy 200 buses, and the MTA could try to appeal that, we knew we had to bring more public attention to the agency and pressure them on the outside and in the streets so that both the legal tactic and the political tactic on the streets could work in tandem to try to force the MTA to do what they said they were going to do. So from the beginning, we've had the bus fare strike. It was called No Seat, No Fare. So at one point, we were trying to get the MTA to buy the buses, and they said they weren't going to. And so we basically organized drivers and bus riders to boycott paying their fare. There are a few scenes in the movie by Haskell Wexler, the Bus Riders Union documentary, where you see bus riders getting on the bus, and then in one scene, the bus driver covering the fare box in solidarity with the BRU's No Seat, No Fare campaign. And we were basically saying, if we don't have a seat, then we're not paying. There was another campaign, the No Somos Sardinas, which was a propaganda campaign where we had this image of sardine cans, all tight in a little sardine can, and then us saying No Somos Sardinas, basically conveying we're not sardines, so don't treat us like that. Buy the buses. Visually, the images were very compelling. The slogans were very catchy. You know, there was No Seat, No Fare, No Somos Sardinas, Don't Play Ball with the Racist City. And we've always been known for the theater work that we do that is rooted in some of the practices and theories of Augusto Boal, as well as our militancy. In Los Angeles right now, there's this really intense debate around the role of civil disobedience. And the local, the city attorney is trying to go after a series of activists who were protesting SB 1070, the racist immigration law of Arizona. They were protesting that here in Los Angeles and engaged in civil disobedience. And now he's trying to go after them and give them jail time. And we believe, to quote the late Dr. Martin Luther King, it is our moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. And the policies that MTA has implemented and developed over the years are unjust when you don't have to raise fares on people and yet you do because you want to prioritize rail expansion. Well, then it's our responsibility to let the people know that this is unjust and that we can do something about it. So to give you a more recent sense of what we've done to then raise our struggles in the public's eye is the Hunger Fast for Justice that took place in the spring of 2010, where myself and six other members of the Bus Riders Union made the choice to put our bodies on the line for about 9 days, where we camped out at Father Serra Park in downtown Los Angeles, which we then claimed and called Rosa Parks Tent City. We drank nothing but water for 9 days to elevate what we feel is a real crisis in our communities, that July 1st, the MTA was going to try to raise fares at a time when rents are skyrocketing, right? When people are being attacked from every which way, you know, people are losing social services. People are losing their jobs. People have not been able to find work for 2+ years and are being pushed out onto the streets. So we wanted to raise the question of the fare increase as a real mass question, something that we felt like whether or not you were a bus rider, you should form an opinion and then do something about it. So that was the most recent street tactic that we did that I think felt very powerful. I mean, and not just because I was a participant, but also just being able to experience people coming and bringing us water and sitting with us, and we had music and many events, and then it culminated in an actual interruption of the MTA's board meeting because they wouldn't let us speak.
Very powerful. Mm-hmm. And people can watch that on YouTube as well. So I wanted to have you touch on the replicableness of your campaign.
One thing that is, I think, important to note is that, yes, post the 90s, and I think more recently, probably in the last 5 to 7 years, there has been a real birth, for lack of a better word, of groups of people in different parts of the city, in different parts of the country, trying to create transit justice organizations, organizations of transit riders. And we believe that organization is everything. So we have to see, and this is when we meet new people, we try to encourage people to build for the long haul, right? You can try to stop a fare increase and then maybe be successful, and then your campaign and your formation will dissolve. But the reality is that anything that is considered a part of the social wage, right, or that is considered a government service, like transportation, is not a guarantee, right? So we know that we've seen in the last 10 years a very scary trend of massive service cuts and huge fare increases all over the country. So we encourage people to build organization and to build for the long haul. We talk a lot about building consciousness, leadership, and organization. So that's not to say that all of the organizations that exist follow those practices or even those theories, but you know, you have like the transit riders in Atlanta, you have organizations, Opal, Bus Riders Unite, you have organizations, there's one in Canada that was started after the BRU in LA, and a lot of these organizations are also a part of Transit Riders for Public Transportation, which is our national campaign and our attempt to really influence the Federal Transportation Act. The money trickles down. And if all of the money is going into capital projects, which means rail and highway, then there's very little money to go into bus. And then the feds don't give any money to operate. That's a very, very crucial component of transit justice and civil rights as we look to the future and how we're going to continue to build a broader transit justice movement in the country. So I think consciousness, leadership, and organization. You have to have members. You have to actually represent the people that ride the bus, that ride the transit system in your city. And it's important for people to be experts in their field, understand the budgets, understand the policies, how it works, as well as create ways for the people that are most impacted by the things that you seek to change to take leadership and lead the organization. I would like to add that, you know, I think right now this is a very critical time for transit all over the country. Los Angeles County with the MTA and the bus riders of Los Angeles are being threatened with approximately 400,000 hours in bus service cuts just a month and a half after another 400,000 hours of bus service was cut in December. And on top of 14 fare increases set for the next 30 years. So we're living in dangerous times. This is the time to seek other civil rights and environmental justice organizations that are doing work around transit. We encourage people to get in touch with us to join Transit Riders for Public Transportation. That's really trying to change the formula at the federal level of how transit dollars actually get spent and where they're going. We need a lot more money for operations, and we need to ensure that at the local, state, and the federal level that that's becoming a priority. Transit Riders for Public Transportation is a great vehicle to be able to do that with a civil rights and racial justice lens. People can call us at 213-387-2800, ask for Esperanza or Francisca, or you can visit us on our website, which is www.busridersunion.org.
That was an interview with Esperanza Martinez. Contact information for the Bus Riders Union will be given at the end of the show.
Next up, we'll hear some interviews with volunteers from the OPAL organization, Organizing People, Activating Leaders. These volunteers are currently working on the Fair Transfer campaign. The Fair Transfer campaign is asking TriMet to extend the hours of their transfers to make the buses and MACs more accessible.
My name is Grace Bentley, and I am the community organizer here at OPAL. Our campaign is specifically to extend transfer times to 3 hours, and then after 7 p.m. have it be unlimited, because right now, after a epic round of service cuts that happened back in September and a fare increase, riders are having a harder and harder time being able to afford a bus pass. And so there's more people using single fare transfers. So those who are transit dependent and using single fares are not getting what they're paying for. And even people who are buying bus passes aren't getting what they're paying for, because we're paying more for less service. That's part of it. The other part of it is that TriMet doesn't do a very good public engagement process. We are the reason that they exist. If it weren't for bus riders, there'd be no TriMet. And yet they have so far shown that riders really don't need to have a voice in their decision-making process, which alienates us from being able to participate. And so our overall goal, as the Bus Riders Unite campaign is concerned, is to be more publicly engaged in TriMet's decision-making process. And this campaign for fair transfer is really our way of being able to take that first step in creating a dialogue with TriMet and getting our voice heard and making a decision, saying, hey, look, you've taken. Can you please just give us something back in return so that we can have a more equitable and fair process?
My name's James, and I'm a volunteer with OPAL, and we're out campaigning for a fair transfer, petitioning, getting signatures from bus riders and people that's concerned about this issue.
Hi, I'm Jackie. I moved to Portland in June and learned about OPAL when they had the block party last July. I really support community organizing and really like the approach they take in really getting out in the community and talking to people and hearing what their concerns really are. And right now, one of the big concerns is the changes to TriMet. So I'm here to support that and as an ally to support bus riders.
My name is Francisco Holdman. And I'm out here today to help collect signatures on their fair transfer campaign. I just believe that with all the cuts and the raising of prices, that the least TriMet can do is extend transfer times and after 7 o'clock let people ride the bus for the rest of the night. You might wait for an hour just for your bus, take an hour bus ride. You're not going to get back to where you need to go. It's ridiculous.
I'm Arabella, and I'm part of a class from PSU that's involved in Better Bus Project. So I'm just out here trying to broaden my horizon and my perspectives on bus riding.
This is your first time out with OPAL?
It is, yeah. I know that they're trying to expand fare time to about 3 hours and unlimited after 7.
Are you excited to be out here today?
I am, yeah. I think it's really unfair that it should take so long to get where you need to go, or that you would have to pay more and more just to get where you need to be every day.
My name is Myrna Andrade Booker, and I'm here representing OPAL, the Bus Riders Unite team, and I'm here to supporting what I believe in, which is public transportation and campaigning for a fair transfer. I am a mother of three. I like to volunteer at OPAL. I work part-time. I'm a homemaker and a home care worker for Aging and Disability Services. And I'm trying to rediscover myself, and one of the places is here by being part of OPAL and Bus Riders Unite team. I discovered Opal at one of the Sunday Parkways.
My name's Crystal Wobnum, and I'm organizing with Opal's Bus Riders Unite crew. I've been a bus rider transit advocate for just a few weeks and participated in a campaign strategy weekend about 3 weeks ago in Vernonia and have been plugged in ever since.
I got involved. I was recruited by Grace Bentley, and from there I've just been going to the BRU meetings, which has been impacting my life a lot, and it's just been a great deal of fun working with Opal. When I was recruited, I was at home, and Grace told me about what she had going on with her job, and I thought it was very good, and it was helping people. And from there, I got involved. I came to their block party last summer, and I helped volunteer, and it's just been a good place for me. You know, I found, you know, a good place to go and to help and to learn about environmental justice.
I got involved in Opal because I was working with Jobs with Justice doing their unemployment campaign in front of the city hall, and some Opal organizers came up and talked to us, and I went to their September 1st rally, and I really liked the vibe and liked the makeup of the people of their organization. I liked that it was a diverse organization. So I went to a second meeting, and I continued to like the people and see that it continued to be diverse. And so I just asked them what I could do to help, and I call myself a freelance activist. I like to support organizations and causes that I can. So I joined their organizing committee and have been out here doing different stuff ever since.
How did you get involved with Opal?
I was working for the Urban League as a volunteer doing the State of Black Oregon Report research. I wanted to do the environmental justice section, but I really didn't know anything about environmental justice. I thought it was cool. So I went online and looked for, like, just Googled environmental justice Portland, and Opal popped up. This was back in 2008. And Kevin O'Dell was the executive director at the time. And I talked to him, and he was like, probably not going to be doing anything with the Urban League, but thanks. And eventually I had to get an actual paid job and I had to go to school. So I was like, bye, Urban League. Opal ended up doing some of the research for the Urban League. And I feel like I played a role in that, even though I wasn't there to see it all happen. Then I got an e-bite to their fundraiser, so I went in 2009. And then in 2010, which is when I was about to graduate from PSU, I was at a panel discussion about environmental justice put on by the Black Studies Department, and I was a Black Studies major. And I spoke up at the end because Avel Gordley was facilitating, and she opens it up for students first. Raised my hand, and I was like, what do you guys recommend for people? I'm about to graduate, and I'm sure a lot of other people in here are about to graduate. What do you recommend for young people to do? Environmental justice is such a holistic framework to work within as far as the social justice movement. What do I do? Afterwards, all these people came and like talked to me, and John Oster was one of them. Within a month, he had offered me the community organizing position. So I was one of the very few blessed people in 2010 to graduate with a job. I've been working there ever since, and it's my life. I love it. I'm super blessed because I'm learning. It's like I'm learning every single day just how to do this crazy job of community organizing. It's very also holistic because you do everything, but it's cool.
My name's Marisa Espinosa, and I am organizing here on the MAX and the bus for changes with the TriMet system with Opal. I'm a part of the new leadership program that just started this month with Opal.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So we're all kind of going to be working for about 10 months with Opal, getting trained in leadership, helping with a current campaign right now to increase transfers. It's campaign for a fair transfer and to increase the amount of service for riders, or to talk about the ways that the transit investment plan, which TriMet does every year, can be more equitable for our communities.
I'm Karen Wells. I'm a neighbor in the Alameda neighborhood, and I'm with Opal today working on the Bus Riders United fair transfer campaign.
Tell me how it's been going for you today here. I'm doing the Opal organizing.
Well, it's been good. It's been good. Got some good responses. Got some people really engaged and said, yeah. And I was talking to one couple at a concessions, and one other person overheard the conversation. And at the end of my presentation to the couple, I made eye contact with the onlooker, and I asked, so are you interested in being supportive? She said, yeah, sure, excellent, you know, absolutely. So that felt really good. So this has been very exciting.
My name is MJ. I'm with Opal, just trying to help to improve the TriMet system.
How has your day been going?
It's actually good. It's much better than what I expected. It's interesting. Most people are interested to sign the petition and signatures to support this. There was this guy that I talked to him. He was so serious about it. He just kept patting me on the back and saying, hey, push it for 4 hours, okay? 2 hours is not enough. Push it, okay? Good luck. He was really into it. That was great.
How did you originally get involved with Opal?
I'm in my capstone in PSU. So we needed to pick a project. This one sounded interesting, and I thought I might be able to make some changes in the environment. So I got involved with this through PSU. I'm just glad to be here. It's really a good thing to do. I believe in it, and I like it.
How has your experience been out there organizing today on the buses and the MACs?
I think it's really positive. Everyone that's I've met, who is a Bus Rider Unite team, is very welcoming and warm, and so it's like a it's like a second family. So we all get along, and we're here for the same cause. There's been two things, you know, you're confronted with people that want to know more about us. You also have people that don't know anything about us, that don't want to have anything to do with us. But it's those that we reach out, and we find out that they want to know more, and they're going to make a difference to help us launch the campaign for a fair transfer.
How do you feel when you're going out on the buses? What is that like for you?
Yeah, I've seen that. It's so much fun, because every time I go out, it's always something. It's a different experience, and I meet so many new faces, and it's interesting because a lot of people, they are very moved by our cause, and some people aren't. But most of all, it's just when I go out there, my mind set on, you know, letting as many people as I can let known about Opal and what we're doing to help our community.
Tell me more about what's been happening for you today.
It's been pretty exciting. I think I'm learning a lot just from the people that I'm working with, and learning from riders themselves. Everybody has their own story about how this is affecting them, and I just feel really privileged to hear those stories, because I know it's going to help us build a really powerful campaign.
Bus rider organizing is fun. I love bus riders. I've been riding the bus since I was a toddler. TriMet specifically, my grandma was one of the 26 female bus drivers for the Rose City Bus back in the day, in the 70s. So I have a strong connection with TriMet. Some bus riders and drivers I've seen and known since I was a kid. So that's one thing. But the other thing about organizing bus riders is that they're riding the bus. So you really have to make it work. You have to make your event, your meeting, whatever you're doing, you need to make it accessible. You need to have at least two or three buses that go to that place. You need to make it at a place where 90% of the people are going to know exactly where that's at. You need to provide food. You need to provide childcare. And you need to let them know that that's what you're doing. Because otherwise, you know, like I'm saying, people are spending an hour or more to get to where you're at. And then they're there for 2 hours, and then they're going to spend an hour or more to get home. So we really have to put that into perspective. And although it's one of our biggest challenges, it's also the thing that brings us all together, because we have one of the most diverse intergenerational, interracial, intercultural organizations, I think, in Portland right now. It's because we are all connected through one thing, which is public transportation. And it just happens to be one of the strongest bonds that is available to us. So it's pretty cool.
Are you a bus rider, or how does this affect you?
I use transit pretty often. I don't have a car. I do like to ride my bike, but I have some chronic health issues that make it so that I really need to have alternatives too, or a backup plan if I need to go to the doctor, I'm not feeling well, or get somewhere that's far away from my home.
Are the fare prices or are the cuts in service, have those been affecting you directly too?
Yeah, definitely. It's made it hard for me to get home from work, especially when I get off of work late. There's a lot less buses or a lot more walking, and on days when I'm not doing well, it's really been a problem for me. But it's also kind of, when I did have a car, it really discouraged me from taking transit. I tried to drive as much as I could, which of course is way more expensive in a lot of ways if you have to go downtown and park, and so it's becoming a big problem.
You are listening to Circle A Radio here on KBOO Portland, your community radio station. We now return to our interviews with volunteers from OPAL, Organizing People, Activating Leaders, who are currently organizing the Campaign for a Fair Transfer here in Portland, Oregon.
How I get around is by car. So I guess I'm a supporter. I mean, I occasionally take the bus when I, you know, can't drive, but just my commute to take my children to school is so far that I pretty much have to drive, or I'd be on a 2.5 hour bus trip. But I have ridden the bus since I started OPAL, just as sort of research. And what I found is, one, there's a lot of characters on the bus, but two, the time that you have to spend on the bus. I just think it's really unfair that you're charging people that are going to minimum wage or low paying jobs, have to also pay for the transportation to these jobs that are essentially what make our economy run. It's like the workers are, you know, they get taxed and taxed on the bus. And, you know, if they weren't taking the bus, if all the people on the bus were commuting on cars, gas prices would be higher. Our commute times would be longer, pollution would be worse. So these people that are doing this ought to be subsidized because they're helping the community as a whole. I did a cost analysis and I figured if I had a family of four, which I do, if I had to buy bus passes, which is the cheapest mode of transportation for two adults and two children, it would cost me more. Just that would cost me more than paying for the insurance and for my car that's already paid for. You know, of course, if you include a car that's a brand new car payment, yeah, it's going to be a little more expensive. But if you have a car that's paid for, your insurance is cheaper than these bus passes. And that just doesn't make any sense. The public transportation should be cheaper than driving a car for everybody, you know, because that way people will use it. If we say we want to be green and we want to and help the environment, that's what we're going to have to do, is lower the price so more people use it. So it's an incentive for people to use public transportation. And then you have to, not even if you're just counting the cost, but then if you add your time, which is valuable, 5-10 times a week, you know, that's a huge amount of time that is money. That's what I mean, essentially, how much is your time worth? So it's saying that these people that have to take transportation, their time is not worth anything. The people that take public transportation, a lot of them do it because they have to. They don't have any other choice. And if people don't have a choice, then it should at least be affordable.
I ride the bus sometimes, but I live right on the MAX line, so I tend to be more of a MAX rider. But I think, you know, the changes, improvements in TriMet will support and affect everyone, so I think it's a good thing.
I've been a dedicated bus rider for many years, and so I gave up my car about 2006, and this is the way to go. I ride my bike, and I do public transportation, and I believe in it, so.
I mean, bus riders are my people, you know what I mean? When I did have a car, and had access to a car, when I lived in Portland, I missed being on the bus, right? Because, I mean, there's so much room for spontaneity and building new relationships with people. And, you know, there's some positives and negatives to that, too, because I think we've all had experiences on TriMet that are, you know, a little bit less than savory. But I use the bus for my livelihood, and I like to connect with other folks whose paths cross with mine in that way. I just read this article online about TriMet being deemed the number one transportation system in the United States. And within the article, it referenced Opal and our campaign for a fair transfer. And I posted on my Facebook page and I was like, don't let this positive headline mislead you, because if you talk with people who are most deeply impacted by the service cuts, by the fare increases, whose lives are dependent on the bus and the max to get around to their grocery shopping, to take their animals to the vet, you know, it's like you talk with us and it's a very, very different picture. And there's a lot of room for improvement. We talk about Portland being one of the most livable cities in the United States. The question of livable for who has to come into play, and I think more often than not, it doesn't. And so I think that's a big part of who Opal is, who we are reaching out to, is who is the city less livable for, you know, and why. And we're here to connect with community so it can be a livable city for all. Essentially, we're building a movement, you know, and when you ask me what's most exciting, that's the exciting part of it to me. You know, we're not professionals who are out to earn a paycheck, you know. I mean, I'm volunteering. That's exciting stuff.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about your background organizing?
I really have done a lot of organizing. I've been active back in the 70s, back in the 80s. Community-based organizing for women's and children's rights. And then in the 90s, being a parent, then I was active within the school systems, not only my neighborhood school, but also I showed up a few times to give witness and support in regards to cuts and program changes that affect Portland Public Schools.
So very local issues that directly affected you and your family.
Very, very much so. I've been in Portland a little over 30 years, and prior to that, when I lived in Southern California, San Diego area, I was also active with civil rights and women's rights and gay and lesbian rights there as well.
So bus riding, is there a civil rights issue involved when we're talking about organizing for fair prices for taking the bus?
Well, yeah, because there's a disparity that's happening in regards to how TriMet is using the transfer. They are actually putting barriers in place to the viability of the transfer by limiting the time and disparity, because there are some areas, and sometimes when the transfer is good for like 2 hours, and sometimes it's good like all day, and the rider never really knows, you know. It almost feels like the rider is at the mercy of the bus driver as to, you know, how viable their transfer is going to be. And also it has to do with environmental justice as well, and social justice as well, and to the protection of the environment, because when more people have access to public transportation, then the amount of congestion, the amount of carbon monoxide by single-use drivers, congestion within the core of the city or in the neighborhoods, public safety issues, there are so many issues connected to public transportation.
What does environmental justice mean to you?
Well, environmental justice has to do with all members of the community have equal access to services that promote quality of life. And justice has to do with having viable remedies and avenues of remedies for people to come together and address issues of concern if they believe that what is currently the status quo is not to the greater good of their community. And so justice would be bringing to task those infrastructure entities that have power and putting them to task to say, you know, look, this is not working for us and you need to be doing better. And it's just the right thing to do. It's a matter of justice.
Now, in the neighborhood that you live in, the neighborhood I live in, King, a lot of the folks who had been living there have been pushed out due to rising housing prices, gentrification. Right. So do you want to comment on that and how that pertains to what we're doing here with transportation?
I believe that gentrification is an issue, and it has to do with those who have resources have access to service. And it talks about the disparity of service delivery. Those who do not have access to service, for whatever the reasons, are barred from access to service that would improve their quality of life. And gentrification is a modern term, I think, to put a nice tablecloth on something that is displacement. It's cultural, social, ethnic, and racial displacement of portions of the community who have long lived rich histories in that particular neighborhood, but they're being pushed out by those who can afford. They can afford the mortgage, they can maneuver the banking system so they can get the loans, or they come from families where they have access to wealth, either family money that can lend them the resources to get them started, or another means of wealth is that they have families who have been able to support them in higher education, post-high school education, so they don't have the debt burden of loans, like myself. I mean, I've got a huge debt load because I didn't have a family that could support. I didn't have the means within the academic structure to access those little venues, the little pockets of money for those who can maneuver that can navigate that and access. You know, it's not necessarily a good old boy system, but it's pretty darn close. It's like, you know, if you know someone who knows somebody who knows somebody, oh yeah, that's a lovely idea. How about we sponsor her? It's like, no, that doesn't happen. So gentrification is a problem because it creates a void of culture and continuity that was longstanding and oftentimes cannot be duplicated.
As a young person of color, I am excited about connecting with other communities of color around issues that affect our lives. You know, I'm a bus rider. I'm dependent on TriMet to get from point A to point B and everywhere in between. And I think there's a lot of power in connecting with other people around issues. And this is the idea of connecting on a one-to-one level about an issue that affects everyone's lives that are TriMet dependent. I mean, there's so much power in those stories. There's a lot of power in coming together, realizing that we have common barriers to this experience, you know, our lived experiences, and organizing around that for power, right? Organizing around that for justice. That's exciting to me. You know, that feeds my spirit as a person. So that's what I do. I mean, I do it, been doing it for a little while outside of Opal too, so I'm not completely new to using the EJ framework, right? But I think a lot, my organizing background, you know, I was introduced to environmental justice issues, you know, doing sacred site tribal organizing on a college campus in Lawrence, Kansas. Environmental justice for me means like communities of color and low-income folks have access to the things that we need to live good, healthy lives, you know? So it's not just about, you know, what people think is like the environmental movement. You know, it's not just about, you know, the air we breathe, plastic bags, you know, all of that. It's about who has access to parks, who has access to transportation, right? Who benefits at improvements and at whose expense, right? So I think it's a pretty holistic approach at organizing around issues.
Have you done this on the bus organizing before?
I have just once before last weekend, and it was a positive experience. You know, I'm back again for more.
Do you see the rights that Opal is campaigning for as a civil rights issue?
I do. It's something that our whole society needs to work together to do what's best for our whole society. The need of the individual does not outweigh the needs of the society. You know, we as human beings will evolve and start taking care of each other. And, you know, the time is now.
Have you been on the bus to organize before? Is this your first?
This is my fifth time out. Yeah, usually, I mean, I've done it actually on the bus, but I prefer to do it at bus stops and MAX stations and just get the people while they're waiting. This is a really positive campaign. Most people that are already bus riders want longer transfer times, you know. So it's not hard once you tell them what it's about. They're pretty happy to sign. So that's a good thing. And getting people, we're inviting people to our campaign kickoff, which is February 21st at 6 o'clock at St. Francis of Assisi Parish. So that's on 12th and Oak. So that'd be a great thing. So we're also inviting people to come down to that. Yeah, it's been a really positive campaign. As Signature Gathering goes, this is probably one of the easiest campaigns I've ever been on. It's always the right time to do the right thing.
I work with Sisters of the Road, which is an organization that's working for economic human rights. And the idea of transit as a basic need and a basic right that people should have access to is something that really stood out to me, and that's why I got involved with Opal. I really think that any community, especially one that's touted as so progressive as ours, should have a good transit system, and that everyone deserves it, and that it can really be a barrier for someone if they're trying to access all sorts of other basic needs, whether it be healthcare, housing, employment. Transit is kind of the glue that holds us all together.
What does environmental justice mean to you?
I think it's about people coming together and making a difference in the various causes that people fall into. And I think uniting and hearing their voices on the topics that are normally brought to the table, rediscovering themselves. That's what that means to me.
Environmental justice means a lot. But I guess I could say what it means the most to me right now is just equality. For people who may not have a voice or may work a lot and who may be disadvantaged and stuck at home or whatnot, we advocate for them. And that's what I found out. Environmental justice really touched base on the working class people, people of color, and, you know, single family homes. And it's just awesome because we really go out here and we help the public, you know, and definitely bus riders right now, and voicing their opinions with, you know, they're concerned about. And it's just so awesome to be involved with Opal.
What is environmental justice?
It's like our current day civil rights movement. It's very holistic because it's more like people in their lived environment and having access to resources. You know, if you, for example, the way that it connects with public transportation, if you don't have the ability to get to school, to get to a doctor's appointment, to get to the grocery store, but these are all your human rights. It's your human right to be able to get home, to be able to get food, healthy food, whatever, but you don't have the ability to get to those places to and from, then your civil rights are being violated. So that's why we say it's definitely a civil rights issue as far as if public transportation isn't just or equitable, however you want to put it.
Who are you inspired by?
Other organizations doing this work that are like way far ahead. Like they've basically like built the model for like the whole city to work on their equity issues. For example, UpRose in New York, in Brooklyn, is a good example of an organization that inspires me. They have pioneered the focus on people of color. They move the lens over and say, hey, you know what? You guys are planning our neighborhood, you're planning our city, you're planning this and that, but it's interfering with my ability to get to work. It's interfering with my ability to breathe healthy, clean air. So as long as you keep doing this, we're going to keep fighting. So it started to build this like voice. And so I really want to be a part of that movement. And Portland is so seemingly very far behind in the process. It's interesting because when you go to like these planning meetings, they're like, we'll talk about equity for a minute. John Oster, who's the co-director, has been talking about how equity is not really a good word because it like diminishes, it takes away from the fact that this is not justice. Just interesting in Portland how like they're just now starting to be like, okay, how can we make this process more equitable? And then like they have to do research on how to do it. And I don't know, it's just not enough hardcore grassroots communities of color, low-income communities, homeless communities, just being like at the forefront of this conversation about equity and being like, you know what, if you really want to talk about equity, then talk to us. We are here. We are established. Opal is established. Sisters of the Road is established. How come they're not coming to us and saying, you guys are our constituency. We want to make this decision. How is it going to impact you and your people? And we wanted to get to a point where instead of them saying, we want to make this decision, but instead saying, we have this money. We want to do something with it. What do you guys want? You know, so we really need it to be at a different level where we're actually not on the defense, but in the whole process completely. That's what inspires me in general, to see that that's happening in other places and to know that we're doing the work that needs to be done. Right now we're on the defense, but pretty soon the goal of, like I said earlier, of this campaign is to be able to be with TriMet in the process and say, have them be held accountable to us as an organization and as just a community of bus riders.
How can people get involved if they want to join up with you guys?
You can come into the office. You can email me, Grace, G-R-A-Y-C-E, at opalpdx.org. Our office is on the corner of 49th and Division, 2407 Southeast 49th. We have tons of opportunities. The more people we have, the more power we have. So whether you want to testify at the TriMet board meeting on our behalf, or on bus riders' behalf, I should say, or come out and canvas with us, or help us prep for a meeting, we would accept you with open arms, for sure.
Can you talk a little bit about what's going to happen February 21st?
Yeah, we are having our campaign kickoff event. And it's really a bus riders' opportunity to join together as a community force, to get your voice heard, to get involved. We hope to be able to do a mass training of the wrap so that people can go out and get petitions filled out. There's going to be food and childcare for free, so that should be an incentive. We want to meet you. We want to know you. We want you to know us. We want you to know what we're doing. We want you to see how, like, we came to this point. So come and be a part of our story. It is at St. Francis Parish, which is located on 11th and Southeast Oak, 1131 Southeast Oak Street. And you can get there by taking the bus number 70. And it's just in the Buckman neighborhood. And it's at 6 p.m. on the 21st of February. And we'll have food and childcare.
You have been listening to interviews with volunteers from Opal, who are currently organizing the campaign for a fair transfer. The campaign is asking for TriMet to extend transfers to be valid for 3 hours and to provide unlimited transfer times after 7 p.m. Opal is holding a rally on February 21st at St. Francis Parish on 11th and Oak in downtown Portland. For more information, you can visit their website at opalpdx.org. Earlier in the evening, we heard from Esperanza from the Bus Riders Union in Los Angeles, California. For more information on the Bus Riders Union, call 213-387-2800 or check out their website at www.busridersunion.org. You can check out past shows or contact Circle A Radio by visiting our website at kboo.fm/Circle A Radio. Circle A Radio airs the first and third Wednesday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Thanks for listening.